namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Which text?
Ashtama. Okay. 170?
Oh, 170. Okay.
So Samhitam Bhagavatim Pritvanukramya Chatmajam Shukam Adhyapayamasa Nivritti Niratam Munihi Sasanghitam Bhagavatim Kritvanukramya Chatmajam Shukam Adhyapayamasa Nivritti Niratam Munihi Saha That Samhitam Vedic Literature Bhagavatim in relation with the personality of Godhead. Pritva, having done. Anukramya, by correction and repetition. Cha, and. Atmajam, his own son. Shukam, Shukadeva Goswami. Adhyapayam asa. Taught. Nivritti. Path of self-realization. Niratam. Engaged. Munihi. The sage. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Vyasadeva, after compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his own son, Sri Shukadeva Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization. Purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentation on the Brahma Sutras compiled by the same author. This Brahma Sutra, or Vedanta Sutra, is meant for those who are already engaged in self-realization. Srimad Bhagavatam is so made that one becomes at once engaged in the path of self-realization simply by hearing the topics. Although it is especially meant for the Paramahamsas, or those who are totally engaged in self-realization, it works into the depths of the hearts of those who may be worldly men. Worldly men are all engaged in sense gratification, but even such men will find in this Vedic literature a remedial measure for their material diseases. Shukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul from the very beginning of his birth, and his father taught him Srimad Bhagavatam. Amongst mundane scholars, there is some diversity of opinion as to the date of compilation of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is, however, certain from the text of the Bhagavatam that it was compiled before the disappearance of King Parikshit and after the departure of Lord Krishna. When Maharaj Parikshit was ruling the world as the king of Bharatavarsha, he chastised the personality of Kali. According to revealed scriptures and astrological calculation, the age of Kali is in its 5,000th year. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled not less than 5,000 years ago. Mahabharata was compiled before Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Puranas were compiled before Mahabharata. That is an estimation of the date of compilation of the different Vedic literatures. The synopsis of Srimad Bhagavatam was given before the detailed description under instruction of Narada. Srimad Bhagavatam is the science for following the path of Nivritti Marg. The path of Pravritti Marg was condemned by Narada. That path is the natural inclination for all conditioned souls. The theme of Srimad Bhagavatam is the cure of the materialistic disease of the human being, or stopping completely the pangs of material existence. So it was Vyasadeva who, on the order of Narada, gave us the Srimad Bhagavatam. It exists eternally. The Bhagavatam is eternal scripture. Jiva Goswami is very definite about that opinion. The problem we have is access to it. According to our karma, we would have never have been aware that the Bhagavatam exists. Our interest is in other topics. I was born after the introduction of television, and although I learned to read books at an early age, before that I was watching television from the birth, practically, I was watching television. And that was my culture. These were the topics I was introduced to. I don't have to specify what they were, but they were not transcendental topics. And even after I started reading books, they were also mundane books. And I never heard of the Bhagavatam. I don't think I really heard of it until I came in contact with Prabhupada's disciples and got one chapter of the second canto published as a separate book in 1972 from a devotee in the New York City bus station, the Port Authority bus station, so they gave me one of these books. And that's the first time I ever heard of or saw the Bhagavatam. Even I didn't know about the demigods or Vishnu, Narayan. I never heard of them. And when I was in sixth grade, I picked up an encyclopedia of religions and looked through the chapter on Hinduism and saw a page with all the gods, including Vishnu lying down with something growing out of his stomach. And that was my impression of Hinduism. Okay, I saw Vishnu, but I really wasn't given an idea of who he was. And maybe the book mentioned Bhagavatam, but I was just looking at the pictures, so I didn't read that part. I didn't know, and I wouldn't have known up to now about the... I may have heard of it, but I wouldn't have understood the importance of the Bhagavatam were it not for the great souls who have been presenting it to us. That it exists is not enough. The contact has to be made between the transcendental literature and the liberated and the conditioned souls who need to be enlightened by it. Conditioned souls are the least likely people to be interested in transcendental literature. It's really of interest to the Paramahamsas. And it really can be fully understood only by the Paramahamsas, the perfect, unconditioned living entities. Nirmatsadanam satam vedyam. Who can understand this Bhagavatam? The book is there. It's meant to teach us something. And there has to be someone who can learn it. If the book is in Ethiopian and nobody who might get the book knows Ethiopian, it serves no purpose. If the book discusses things that the people who are likely to read it are not equipped to understand because it's in a foreign language or because it deals with very technical topics that ordinary people can never understand, then it serves no practical purpose except for the few people who can understand that. So who can really understand the Bhagavatam? It's a very special presentation of very special subject matters. Who can understand it? So, honest opinion is given. Yes, really only the Paramahamsas can fully understand it. But as Prabhupada explains in the purport, the Bhagavatam has the potency to give enlightenment in the form of transcendental knowledge to ordinary people. Every human being is a fit candidate to study the Bhagavatam. Every human being. And that is why Prabhupada promoted very vigorously the distribution of Srimad Bhagavatam to everybody in the world, even to the extent of having it published in all sorts of languages and sold to people on the streets, people who obviously don't have much or any spiritual qualification. Still, he wanted that book in everybody's hands and in everybody's home, Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's first of all meant, and first of all can be properly understood in its full depths, only by the liberated Paramahamsas. The Paramahamsas, when they read the Bhagavatam, when they hear any verse of the Bhagavatam, they can relish, they can experience the rasa that is encapsulated in those verses, the transcendental taste, the ecstasy. It's not just information. It's pibhata bhagavatam rasam alayam. So it's not just a metaphor that it's like mango juice. Mango juice you can get in the market. You can get take the pulp, and even when it's out of season, the dried pulp, they squeeze it in water and make, you know, these fruity drinks out of it. For 10 rupees, you can get your mango juice. Either, you know, if not fresh, at least it's reconstituted mango juice. That's called rasa. But that's just a metaphor. Okay, it's like mango juice, especially like a mango that doesn't have a pit or any skin. Just straight juice. But it's not just mango juice. Mango juice anybody can get for 10 rupees. It is rasa, the transcendental taste of the spiritual enjoyment of reciprocation between the Supreme Lord and his devotees. This you can't buy for 10 rupees. This can't be bought for all the money in the world. And the Bhagavatam is full of that rasa. Every verse of it is dripping in that rasa. You may wonder, where's the rasa? Here's chapter 13 of the first chapter describing Vidura preaching to Dhritarashtra. What's the rasa there? There's rasa, Karunya rasa, and Bibhatsa rasa. The rasas are there. And even in the verses described that so-and-so was the grandson of so-and-so and who cares, even the rasa is there, somehow. Every verse, every word of the Bhagavatam is steeped in rasa. It's permeating, all permeating. And the Paramahamsas can taste it. And those who can taste rasa are tasting a pleasure that the materialists have no idea about. With all their drugs and sex, they have no idea about such pleasure. That's the value of the Bhagavatam. Especially for those who are rasikas and bhavukas, who are attracted to rasa and can understand it. And you have some feelings in their heart. Those people can actually appreciate properly the Bhagavatam. But even ordinary people, even people with no spiritual life, their spiritual life can be awakened just by contact with the Bhagavatam. That is why Prabhupada's program was to distribute Bhagavatam to everybody in the world, because they will all benefit by it. That is the extra potency of the Bhagavatam. It's not only for the Paramahamsas. It's first of all for the Paramahamsas, because they can understand it for what it really is. but it can transform any human being just by being heard, or even just by having it in your on your bookshelf in your house, even if you never take it down. If you have the Bhagavatam living in your house, according to what we've read, I think we already read it in the Tapasandarbha from another Purana, the one who has the Bhagavatam in his house has Lakshmi Narayan living in his house. What to speak if you read it or if you hear it spoken by devotees? It has a transforming effect on the conditioned souls. That's the transforming effect of the rasa. The information is not the first thing, the literal information contained in the Bhagavatam. Most of that information is also available in other books. The histories, the genealogies, the description of the structure of the universe, what we're reading this morning about how the living entity takes birth in the womb and how his development of the living entity, this is all described in medical textbooks and in other Puranas. But the Bhagavatam's descriptions of everything it describes are full of rasa. We don't have a perception of rasa, but when we digest what contains rasa, it has its effect anyway. It has effect on us, liberating effect. Shrinvatakshrakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha Vidyan Takstohi Abhadrani Vidudoti Saritsatam. We just need to simply hear and chant the names of the Lord and the glories of the Lord, presented purely. We should hear the holy name from pure devotees and try to chant it purely. And we should hear the Bhagavatam, the Gita and Bhagavatam from pure devotees, or from at least the representatives of pure devotees. Then it has great effect, because Krishna reciprocates. It is one of the primary acts of devotional service, to simply hear and chant the Lord's names and to hear and chant the Gita and the Bhagavatam. Devotional service means it causes Krishna to reciprocate. You do something for Krishna and he likes to do something for you. So you just hear. Shrinvatak sokata. One who is it's a present participle in the genitive singular form, shrinvataha, for someone who is hearing. It's not that I'll hear now and maybe I'll get some benefit in my next life or in a future life. Who knows how far in the future? No, immediately, in the present, while you're listening. As soon as you listen, takshanat. Sadyak vidya varujite, sadya. It's actually repeated. Sadya. What does sadya mean? Immediately. Okay, you could say, well, literally, in the original Vedic context, it just means on the same day. Dya is a Vedic form of the word dyu, meaning day. So sadyaha means on the same day. So, okay, within 24 hours. No. Tat kshanat. Kshanam is not a day. Kshanam is the smallest fraction of time. From that very moment, sadyak vidya varujyate. Vidi avarujyate. Avarud means to become captured. The Supreme Lord becomes captured in the heart. One begins his realization of Krishna consciousness. And it's Krishna who's reciprocating, as described by Suta Goswami. Krishna listens. For someone who is listening to his own topics, Krishna responds to that person. And he responds by beginning to purify, to cleanse the contaminations in the heart of the person who is hearing. As soon as a person begins to hear, Bhagavatam has that effect. It has immediate effect. As soon as one is actually hearing it. Because Krishna reciprocates, and he, from inside, as the Supersoul, begins the process of cleansing. So it's very important that arrangements are made so that people who need to can hear the Bhagavatam. This is the prime business of Vaishnavas in the world in Kali Yuga. We have no more important business. And Prabhupada knew that, and he organized ISKCON on that basis. Our first business is to arrange for people to hear the Krishna's names, the Gita, and the Bhagavatam. That's our first business. Everything else has to serve that purpose and not distract from it. If we let whatever we're doing and thinking distract from the prime purpose of Prabhupada, then we're not fully participating in his mission. It's a matter of intention. It doesn't matter what color dress you're wearing, or where you're living, or other external factors. What matters is are you actually working to fulfill that mission of getting everybody to hear and chant Hare Krishna, to hear and chant the Gita and the Bhagavatam? That's what will save them. Their suffering and that alone is what will deliver them. Without that, without the holy name, without the Gita and Bhagavatam, they won't be saved. No matter what you do, no matter what schemes and gimmicks you come up with, if you don't give them the essence, they won't be delivered. And neither will you. So arrangements have to be made. A lot of arrangements have already been made, starting with Vyasadeva's arrangements. He was instructed by Narada, his guru, to meditate on the Supreme Lord and his internal and external energies. And then, based on what he experiences in his meditation, he should compile the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam already existed, but the arrangements needed to be made so that those who need to receive it can receive it. So just like a book can be written by an author, but it may not be in order. It needs editing. It needs to be turned into a book. We have word processors now, and a person can publish his own book if he knows how to do. But before that existed, a person either had it just in his head, and he might speak it to a scribe, or he writes it down himself on a palm leaf or a birch bark. But even then, someone needs to distribute. You can write down one copy of your book, and how many people can read that one copy? So it has to be further copied again. And perhaps it requires editing. So this editing and publishing business is extremely important. This is how arrangements are made, so that those who need to receive the transcendental literature can do that. That it exists somewhere is not good enough. It needs to get into the hands of the right people who need it, and they have to be induced to hear it, to read it. So therefore, book distribution, book publishing and book distribution is not something that Prabhupada created. The first, BBT was organized by Vyasadeva. He compiled the Bhagavatam and then taught it to his son, Shukadev. And even that's not enough. Shukadev had to speak it again to King Parikshit, because the fact that Parikshit was delivered by hearing the Bhagavatam is one of the prime reasons for substantiating the authority of the Bhagavatam. The whole first canto is actually an introduction explaining the advent of the Bhagavatam. It's an introduction to the Bhagavatam, which consists of the history of the appearance of the Bhagavatam. And that history is traced back to the end of the narration of the history of the Pandavas as contained in the Mahabharata. In that way, where Mahabharata ends is where Bhagavatam begins. With the after the victory of the Pandavas, they depart this world because Krishna has departed. And with the departure of Krishna and his great devotees, there's only left Parikshit as the heir to the tradition of the Kurus. And Parikshit becomes the one who hears the Bhagavatam from Shukadev. So that all history is the main contents of the whole first canto of the Bhagavatam. So Vyasadeva taught the Bhagavatam to his son Shukadev. Tadidam grahyama sa sutam atmavatam varam saravedetihasanam saram saram samudvitam. Vyasadeva taught the Bhagavatam to his son Shukadev. And what he taught him, the book he taught him, contained the essence distilled from all the Vedas and Itihasas. And then, Shukadev, in order to arrange that the world receives the Bhagavatam, it had to be spoken again by Shukadev to Parikshit. Sattu samsravayama sa Maharaja Parikshitam Prayopavishtam Gangayam Paritam Paramarshibihi. That same Shukadev then spoke, a few years later, spoke the Bhagavatam, after Krishna's disappearance, to Parikshit, who had been cursed to die in 7 days, and who was fasting on the banks of the Ganga, surrounded and accompanied by many great sages. That was a public speaking of the Bhagavatam. There were maybe a few hundred people present, and maybe some fraction of them were close enough to actually hear all of it. But there was one person in that audience who spoke it again. Tatra kirtiyato vipra viprashe buditejasaha aham cha jagamam tatra nivishas tatanugrahat soham vam Shrava yishyami yata ditam yata mati. I, this is Ugrashrava Sutta, the son of Roma Harshana speaking, who is sitting on the Vyasasana and has already narrated the Mahabharata and all the Puranas to the sages present at Naimisharanya. And now it's the beginning of the Bhagavatam, end of the third chapter of the first canto. And he's telling him, I was seated there by the great mercy of Vyasadev and of Shukadev. I was sitting there when Shukadev spoke the Bhagavatam to Parikshit, and I was able to hear it carefully and remember it. And now I will tell you exactly, word by word, everything that Shukadev spoke, at least according to my capacity. And what I've heard, I can repeat. I can't add anything else. And I can only present it according to the depths of my realization, no more than that. Yata ditam yata mati. And he does. He perfectly narrates the same Bhagavatam to the sages at Naimisharanya. And then the further history is not specified in the Bhagavatam, but it was again passed on by generations of gurus and disciples. Eventually someone wrote it down, so that people in Kali Yuga who cannot remember so properly could preserve it. And eventually, various Vaishnavas wrote commentaries on it. And eventually, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada translated the Bhagavatam into English and put in his purport the essence of all those commentaries. So in that way, it's been made accessible to the world. And Prabhupada wanted the books to be published properly, properly edited, properly published, and distributed. It wasn't just enough that Prabhupada wrote his book. It could have sat as a manuscript forever, but it needed to be printed, published, edited, printed, and then sold. This was Prabhupada's mission. Prabhupada redefined the word Sankirtana. Jiva Goswami's definition is Bahubir Militva Uchai Kirtanam. Many people get together, several people get together, and they loudly glorify the Lord's names and fame. That is the proper definition of Sankirtanam. The Prabhupada called going out to sell books in the street Sankirtana. And so in ISKCON, when we talk about chanting party in the street, we call that Harinam nowadays. So when I first joined, it was still called Sankirtan. But when someone goes on Sankirtan, he's carrying a book bag. And when someone goes on Harinam, he's going to chant. The distinction has to be made in the ISKCON language. Because distributing the Bhagavatam and the Gita to the general populace in Kali Yuga is the most potent way of glorifying the Lord. That is Sankirtan in its essence. The Brihanmadanga. Anyway, all these arrangements have been made going back to Vyasadeva himself, just so that the Bhagavatam can be distributed to the whole world. Lots of Bhagavatams have been distributed, over 100 million altogether. I don't know, at least a lot of millions of Bhagavatams in many languages, but there still hasn't reached every single hand and every single home in the world, and especially people aren't, so many of them, reading it. So the work is not finished. We have to, okay, even if millions of seeds have been planted, we have to water those seeds and get people to read the Bhagavatam. We have to preach to them and write other books that will entice them to read that Bhagavatam. And then the world will change. Then the mission that was established by Vyasadeva himself to deliver the conditioned souls suffering in Kali Yuga will actually bear its fruit. It's only that process is only beginning to fructify. So there are thousands of devotees, maybe hundreds of thousands, but that's not enough. That doesn't completely fulfill the mission of Vyasadeva. So our business is, prime in business, is of course to hear and chant Krishna's glories and to study the Bhagavatam, but we have to help finish the process of distributing the Bhagavatam and teaching the Bhagavatam to others and somehow enticing people to be interested in the Bhagavatam. That's our prime business. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions or comments? I guess Sarvagipa was first.
Okay, thank you. So Srila Prabhupada, he called that Bhagavad Gita is ABC of spiritual knowledge, and at the same time, no importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. So if we have a choice to give people first Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, what we should do? Or is there any importance of this proper order? Shall we start from Bhagavatam?
If you have a practical choice, then probably better to first give a new person the Gita. It's much easier to understand, and it presents the basics. Bhagavatam may be too much for a brand new person. So yes, Gita should normally be given first. It doesn't mean Gita is only introductory. It's Krishna himself talking. Even if it's Krishna on the battlefield and not Krishna in the rasa dance, still it's the same Krishna, and he's talking in the Gita. So you can't say it's an unimportant book, and we're graduated. We don't need that anymore. It's not just for beginners. And unless we've actually realized all the recommendations in the Gita, and we become Vita Raga Bhaya, we still need to hear it over and over again.
At the same time, if you don't have this opportunity to give Bhagavad Gita, for example, we have only Bhagavatam give to it. People, we can just give it and be concerned and be sure that Bhagavatam itself can preach to any person without any qualification, because it's Bhagavatam.
Well, especially since it's Bhagavatam with Prabhupada's purports. So Prabhupada presents the essence of the Gita also in the Bhagavatam purports. Prabhupada said, for preaching, the most important thing is to know the Bhagavad Gita very well. He said, even I'm giving Bhagavatam class every day, but I'm quoting Bhagavad Gita all the time in the Bhagavatam classes. So for the preaching, the Bhagavatam is essential. The Gita is essential. And Prabhupada is using the Gita in the Bhagavatam purports. So they'll get their Gita even if all you give them is a Bhagavatam, if you give them it with Prabhupada's purports.
In this connection, I know two people that their first book they received was some random Bhagavatam.
Yes.
And they were so amazed by what they were reading.
Yes.
I remember one of my friends was saying, I was calling my friends and I was thinking, listen to this, hogs, dogs, camels and asses.
Yes.
So it has effect.
It does, yeah.
I had a few questions. First of all, isn't Vyasadeva, he didn't wrote the Bhagavatam? Because you said that he passed it down and then after Sutta Goswami, you're commenting, maybe somebody wrote it down. But isn't that sure?
You mean he didn't write it? You mean he didn't write it down?
Yeah, did he?
No, he didn't.
Did he not? No?
No, Prabhupada says no, Ganesh wrote down Mahabharata, but not the other books. So, no, because the normal process was it's actually better, much better to receive this Vedic literature by hearing than by reading. In fact, traditionally it's considered offensive to study the Vedas out of a written book. Only it has to be allowed in Kali Yuga because people can't remember from hearing. But at least, especially the Vedas, you know, the Shruti, it's not supposed to be learned by reading it from a book.
So actually, Vyasadeva, he compiled the Vedic scriptures.
And then spoke it to his disciples.
Spoke it, but he did not actually write it down.
Except for the Mahabharata.
Okay, except for... And it got written down within the tradition, like later on, some people wrote it down.
Yeah, maybe maybe 1,000 years later.
Okay, thank you. I remember there was a question that the Bhagavatam is included within the 18 Puranas, which in this purport is mentioned that it's written before the Mahabharata. And you answered to this, quoting Jiva Goswami, that...
Well, that's coming up in a week or two in Tapasandarbha. Okay.
And it seems that this verse, I don't know if it is an evidence of this, because in the word for Anukramya, it says revising it. After compiling the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it.
Well, anukramya technically means adding a table of contents. Anukramanam means the way we do a table of contents in modern times. We have that in our Bhagavatam, but like a summary of the contents. And that we see in the 12th canto. In I think the next to last chapter, there's a rundown of the major topics of the Bhagavatam. That's called anukramanam.
But Vyasadeva did that to his son?
It says first of all he did that, and then he taught his son. Okay, yeah. How he did that? Because that section of the 12th canto supposedly was already there. He didn't create it from nowhere. Maybe he wrote some other table of contents. I don't know. We'd have to look at the commentaries, or maybe even they don't say exactly what he did. Revised doesn't mean he changed anything. He may have added something. Or written something separate that goes along with the Bhagavatam.
Because the explanation that was given is that there was the Bhagavatam in the Puranas, one of the 16 Puranas.
Well, yeah,
and
yeah.
Then,
right. 18 Puranas.
Sorry, yeah. One of the 18 Puranas. And then he added more. That was just a condensed version of the Bhagavatam, but he revealed the real Bhagavatam later.
Okay, but that's the eternal Bhagavatam. It's not a new Bhagavatam. Yeah. The full version, the 18,000 verse version, is eternal.
Eternal.
According to Jiva Goswami.
Yes? Hinted that by saying after compiling the Bhagavatam and revising it?
What it might mean, you want me to guess? What Anukramya was actually referring to, he didn't write down the Bhagavatam, right? So he didn't write anything on paper. But he did speak it to his disciples. So if you're going to recite the Bhagavatam to your disciples, and you've got more than 7 days, you would also add some explanation. You give, you know, you recite, and you also give your purport verbally. So he probably explained the Bhagavatam to his disciples. And, you know, in that sense, he added more. That didn't get become part of the Bhagavatam, and in fact, it wasn't recorded. We don't have the notes from anybody in the class of what Vyasadeva said, but he must have said something to his disciples. That could have been the Anukramanam. You know, the summary of the Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva gave to his disciples, which wasn't recorded.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Chinchi Chaitanya Prabhu.
How the Bhagavatam is the highest Shruti to shown Jiva Goswami. Now, what about the genealogy that is given in the Bhagavatam? Like, for example, which king came after? This whole sequence of kings given there in the Bhagavatam.
Yes.
So, how do you consider that as eternal?
It's part of the Bhagavatam. All 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam, including those verses, are eternal.
The sense that that keeps happening.
Because it's historical? What about the verses like this one that describe the Bhagavatam? Wait a minute. Describe how the Bhagavatam was composed, but this is the Bhagavatam describing it. How does that work? It works because the Bhagavatam can describe things before they happen. So it doesn't matter when this history occurred, past, present, or future, the Bhagavatam describes all of it, past, present, and future. No. Bhagavatam is describing, like any Purana, is describing some particular day of Brahma and particular manvantaras. It's not, you know, it's not always like that, but in a particular day of Brahma, particular manvantara, this is who appears and what they do. And it's specified in the Bhagavatam which days of Brahma is we're talking about.
What does eternal mean in the sense that...
The book is eternal. Not that everything that it talks about is eternal. It talks about... This is it. It talks about events in particular times and places, but the description of it is eternal. You find the same thing in the Upanishads. You know, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad describes the conversation between King Janaka and Yajnavalkya that happened at a certain time in history in a certain place, but the Upanishad is supposed to be eternal. The book comes first, and it's like the script for a play. The script is there first, and then the actors perform it on various occasions. They're just reading the script. The book comes first, and then the enactment of it comes later. Because the book's eternal. When it's Shruti you're dealing with. Yes?
Okay.
And then...
So every syllable of the Bhagavatam is eternal?
Yeah. Nothing changes.
Okay.
If any syllable changed, if a dot got knocked off an I, then that would change the Bhagavatam and it wouldn't be eternal. Eternal means not changing.
So
eternal doesn't mean you just exist, but you gradually get worn down to almost nothing. It means you exist and you stay the same. That's being eternal. So every single letter in the Bhagavatam has to remain as it is forever.
We have different manuscripts, and they have sometimes different.
Yeah, words. There is some inaccuracies in the recording of the Bhagavatam because we have variant readings. That means some of them are wrong and some of them are right, but we can't always sort them out. But if you look at all those variant readings, they almost never make any difference in the meaning.
Mm-hmm. But there's one original, and we're getting some.
Right, but we may not know. Okay, we have three different readings for this word, or two different readings, and for every couple of verses, we have different readings. Of a word or two, there is an original word. We're not sure which one it is, because we have this manuscript and that manuscript, and they disagree a little bit, but the disagreements are very minor. Yeah. They almost never make any difference in the meaning. Oh, yeah, that's our problem: is that we've imperfectly preserved the Bhagavatam. We got manuscripts, some of them, you know, that are not exactly accurate. That's life in Kali Yuga. But there is an original, and it's eternal. We have Sridhar Swami's commentary, and we just, what words he says are there, we trust that those are the real words. When Sridhar Swami says the verse said that, and it had those words, then we simply follow his opinion on it. It is an alternate reading, and it's different than the one that Sridhar Swami chose. We just go with Sridhar Swami 1, and we assume that's the original. Because Lord Chaitanya accepted Sridhar Swami as primary authority. We're very lucky to have that commentary of Sridhar Swami. And he not only explained almost every verse, but he mentioned a lot of the words in the verses, which helps us make sure that we have, you know, to a good extent, what the original words are. Because we have Sridhar Swami's say-so on it. Okay. And then we stop. Yeah.
Okay. It's just interesting information. I don't know. I feel that I have this petty question. I don't know if I should...
Go ahead.
So
keep the mic close here.
So the Bhagavatam is eternal, and all 18,000 verses are. If Sukadeva Goswami spoke all the verses to Maharaj Parikshit, wouldn't it mean that he would have to ask Maharaj's questions as well? I'm sorry, just
yes.
the limited intelligence, that I guess.
I guess so. Well, Sukadeva spoke the whole Bhagavatam, right? Not just some part of it. That means he sat there and read and spoke to Sukadeva, to Parikshit, Parikshit's questions to him. That's a good question. If he actually spoke the whole thing, and far as we're told, he spoke the whole thing.
Or maybe just when you, the last thing you said before I asked the question kind of made me think about this. You said that it is like a play. And then,
yes.
Then I thought maybe they were divinely inspired by Krishna. Like there was a gap and then... But I guess it's just my...
It might be. It might be that Sukadeva, you know, didn't say Sukadeva Uvacha, Shuka Uvacha. He didn't say that. And he didn't repeat, you know, the parts that directly involve him talking to Parikshit, because he's talking to Parikshit. It could be that he left those verses out in the particular recitation. I can't say which way it is. Yes?
That when Vyasadeva taught Srimad Bhagavatam to Sukadeva, so in that the questions are also included.
Yes, that what Sukadeva heard from Vyasadeva has to be the original Bhagavatam. And then the point is, Sukadeva just repeated. If he starts leaving things out, then he's starting to edit. But he didn't do that. He didn't change anything. That's what we're told.
So he knew what questions Maharaj Parikshit will be asking. So after speaking, he paused a while, during which Maharaj Parikshit, he anticipating that questions will come, and then he knows what's to answer. And I mean, it's just like a play, as you said.
Maybe. Okay, maybe. I'm not sure. We can puzzle over this some more, but it might just bewilder us.
It seems to really know the answer. We'll have to go to the next recitation of Sukadeva Goswami, to at the next universe. I don't know wherever he's.
Well, go to the spiritual world where the Bhagavatam is being recited by Sukadeva Goswami eternally. Okay, but first we have to eat breakfast. So okay, sorry, give.
Quick question.
Yeah.
So it's about Srila Vyasadeva's meditation. So they said that Samyak Bhakti Yogana Manasi Samyak Pranihitaya Male. So he started to meditate, and then it was already there, this book. And then can we imply that Anukramya, in which you referred this verse, means that he imbued it, Srimad Bhagavatam, with his personal realization, and in this way, because of his devotional trance, Srimad Bhagavatam had appeared in full in his full form.
But there are two gerunds there, Kritva and Anukramya. So he did two things. He compiled it, and then he did another thing, which is called Anukramya.
So
what's the compiling? It's, you know, it's not just he saw it in his meditation. He actually put it together in his head, you know. He didn't write it down. He didn't have to. He didn't need a word processor. you know, or a printer. He just put it all in his head. But there was some mental process that's called kritva. Mm-hmm. He put it together in his head. And then he did the what Prabhupada calls revising. So there's two different things there, two different activities.
So I'm just thinking what it could be that he got one, it was on one original version of Bhagavatam, which he had already compiled before. Then he, Kritva, he made some version, and then, as you told, that he spoke to his disciple with his explanation, so maybe...
I think what he did is he put it on his hard drive, in his head. You know, he stored it in his head. That's Kritva. Yeah, put it together in his head. And then, you know, he had to record it, but all he had to do was had it recorded in the neurons in his own brain, and that was good enough.
So it was like an intermediate version of Bhagavatam.
No, it's the whole thing.
But then he spoke it to his disciples along with his explanations.
I think the explanations, my guess is those, if the explanations, he must have given some explanations to his disciples. Mm. He had plenty of time to add explanations. And I don't. Those explanations are not recorded anywhere.
Oh, so it's
that's lost. That's lost. If what we're talking about, the Anukramya is the explanation. It's just my guess. Mm-hmm. Then those explanations have not been recorded anywhere. We don't have among the commentaries, you know, somebody's notebook of what Vyasadeva said in class. We don't have that.
So can we tell that the Srimad Bhagavatam which he has now, it's what was done after Kritva? That the Srimad Bhagavatam which we have now, it what was done after Kritva?
But I think that the Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva received in his meditation is the same Bhagavatam. It's not any different. 18,000 verse complete Bhagavatam is what Vyasadeva saw in his mind and what he spoke to Shukadev. So before the, you know, what he kritva, what he put in his head, was the entire Bhagavatam, and what he then spoke in the next verse to his son was the whole Bhagavatam. Same one. But he did different things to it. He put it in his head, then he came out of his mouth. These are different processes.
Thank you.
Okay, let's stop here. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.